Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
When the attendees of IMSA's 1981 Camel GT arrived at Sears Point, two things were immediately apparent. First, it was a great day. 76 degrees, sunny with a gentle breeze. Ooh. The second was the charred hill where Hurley Haywood's Porsche 935 had caught fire and burnt to the ground just the day before. In the words of one fan reflecting on the event some 20 years later, in hindsight, maybe there's something very symbolic about that grass. The 70s and early 80s were practically an arms race of automotive engineering. From fuel injection to turbos to aerodynamics, manufacturers and privateers alike were breaking new ground in name of ever faster lap times. It was an age of pioneering that bridged the gap between the legends of the past and the racing we love today. And while Sears Point is no Le Mans, it does represent a moment in the ever-evolving landscape of the sport that we can point to and say marked the end of an era. Today on Pass Gas, what was Group 5 special production? Why were the late 70s considered a golden era for circuit racing? And how did Ford manage to unseat one of the most successful Porsches ever made? This is the story of the Mustang that took down Porsche. Hell yeah.
Holler if you love Sears.
Gas podcast. It's not cars, it's not about
parts. I think that was kind of an unnecessary dig at Sears Point. It's like, and while Sears Point is no Le Mans, it's like, whoa, hey,
it's a
hold
good,
up.
It's good. You're not gonna believe Sonoma.
Yeah, Sonoma, right?
Oh, we love
is that
Sonoma.
The old
That's the name old name for it.
For it
yeah, okay. And then I think it was Infineon at one point, and now it's
and
Sonoma,
now it's now it's Chick-fil-A,
Jewel.
Jewel Melanin Vape Raceway.
Welcome back to Past Gas, everybody. My name is Nolan Sykes, joined as always by my co-hosts, James Pumphrey.
Give me back my son!
And Joe Weber.
Keep it juiced.
Sorry, That was good.
That was tight.
Was it really?
That was sick,
oh, it felt so corny coming out.
No, man, you were just nervous because it was new.
Yeah, it felt good.
It was sick, dude.
I just have to commit next time.
I loved it. Okay. I can't imagine what it would feel like if you committed. If that wasn't commitment.
Yeah.
Dude, I don't know if I'm ready for that.
I bailed a little bit. Come on.
Oh, man, you're too humble.
And today we're talking about...
Nolan Sykes.
Oh, yeah, go ahead and give it the goose. Go ahead and goose it.
And then your new one.
Get tilted, everybody.
Yeah, get tilted.
Yeah. Let me try that one more time. Let's bring it back. Okay. Go ahead and goose it, but settle in. Get yourself a nice little snack, drink, whatever, or just be at peace and get tilted with us today.
Oh, that's what tilted means.
Like you're getting cozy.
Yeah, get tilted like this.
Yeah.
Also means like hammering it into the...
Yeah, you're like
a
tilted.
Turn.
Yeah.
Like,
or you're like tilted meanings. On an off-road
on bank.
Yeah. Crawling up something. Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of meanings.
Tilted.
And also, I feel like a lot of people are probably listening to this at work.
Solid IP.
So don't get cozy and relax at your job because
your boss
will fire you.
Your boss will fire you because he's a fascist.
Because he's not tilted.
He's not.
Your boss not tilted.
Not tilted.
Your boss, a little high strung. Yeah. Probably has a broom up his ass.
Today we're talking about Group 5 Racing, which I think has produced some of the coolest looking race cars out there. We're talking production cars that have crazy aerodynamics on them. You've probably seen these things on, you know, very curated vintage motorsports Instagram pages where it's like, oh, a simpler time. But like, that's not a simpler time.
Patina research.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff going on. It's not that simple.
Yeah, patina research. Take that watermark out of your things. I want to share more of your stuff.
I want to share more of your stuff, but I don't want anyone to know where I got
the
it.
The name's going to be on the bottom, but, you know, it like kind of ruins the intro of the video.
Yeah. The intro tag is a little much for Joe.
They do great research.
Yeah.
And I love your page. Want to share more of your stuff.
The Group 5 cars look a lot like Bo Susoku.
Mm.
cars, but like actually
what
racy.
Yeah. Actual yeah. race cars.
So this is what became Silhouette Cars.
Hmm.
It went 1,000 different directions.
Well, Silhouette, that was over in Japan, right?
Yeah.
But I mean, it went from like road racing to rally racing to now it's back to road racing again.
Okay.
This has been a bunch of different types of racing. Group five has. Mm. So
nice. Okay.
My favorite group of five is the Backstreet Boys.
Oh. Say NSYNC? Question mark.
No.
I thought you were gonna talk about that show from the '90s with
a group of five. Party of Five.
Yeah.
With Jennifer Love Hewitt.
Group of five. Jennifer Love Hewitt. That's what they said at the restaurant Hewitt, in the beginning of the show.
Party of Five. Jennifer Love Hewitt. Nev Campbell. Charlie.
Some guy named Luke.
Has cancer. What?
Some guy named Luke in that, too.
Some guy named Luke in that, too. Party of Five.
Yeah.
Cool. I'm excited. Let's get into it. I'm always excited.
I'm stoked for this episode
and to read this story to you. Let's get into it.
Let's strap it on.
Let's strap it on.
Let's strap it on and go at each other.
The history of Group 5 racing is complicated and takes a lot of left turns, so to speak.
And right ones.
Where it started and where it ended are two completely different places. But without the people that made it possible, we wouldn't have some of our favorite race cars of all time.
Yeah.
Introduced by the FIA in 1966, the title Group 5 applied to four generations of regulations. The first, special touring cars, were adopted for the British Saloon Car Championship beginning in 66, then the European Touring Car Championship in 68.
This car is like the Jennifer Love Hewitt.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
The rules were simple. There were none.
Got me in the first half.
This was a category made for highly modified touring cars, so every detail was left up to the manufacturers. The special touring cars category was discontinued after the 69 season and replaced by the sports car class, who had previously been considered Group 4 sports cars, okay? The minimum production requirement was only 25 units, and the engine capacity was limited to 5,000 cubic centimeters or 5 liters.
5 liters.
Big.
That's a big old boy. Yeah. A honking V8.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Especially, I mean, in the context of European cars, like
that's as big as they get.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But other than those rules, the freedom to choose what to do was up to the manufacturer. And this era includes legends like Porsche's first Le Mans winner, the 1970 Salzburg 917K, and the 1971 Martini 917K, which set a Le Mans distance record that wouldn't be beaten until 2010.
Whoa.
What?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That means it did the most laps.
That's like 150 years.
It also included the Ferrari 512S and the Ferrari 512M. The sports car class pushed car manufacturers to compete with prototypes, and even though the new rules were supposed to encourage further technological progress, their frequent changes to the regulations, as well as the skyrocketing costs, turned many fans and manufacturers away from Group 5 in favor of F1. Simply put, it didn't make financial sense for teams to have their top-of-the-line racing program split across two FIA categories, and with the meteoric rise of Formula One, brands like Ferrari and Alfa Romeo consolidated their efforts there.
I mean, it makes sense because, like, this is, like, a no-holds-barred, like, racing series. Like, just make them as fast as you can. But then you also have to base it on a road-going car.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, F1 is, like, make it as fast as you can.
Yeah.
And you don't have to base it on anything. I think I'm more attracted to something like Group 5.
Same.
I like to use my imagination and be like, that's my car. Like,
yeah.
The first thing I did when you started reading is, like, I Googled Group 5 BMW.
Yeah.
There was the E21. But,
oh, yeah. Okay.
Because you're like, that's my car.
Yeah,
and like
that's
it's easier to root for your why home team.
If it wasn't Ferrari and Alfa Romeo leading the charge on that, it's possible that Group 5 would still be super relevant today, maybe, because, I mean, those brands already had a very strong lineage in Formula One and Grand Prix racing. They were probably already more interested in that from the get. And then if those guys leave, the other manufacturers are like, okay, if the best has left, then like...
Right, and like Ferrari's not known as...
Almost spilled my water bottle all over Joe's computer. That was crazy.
And my phone.
Ferrari's,
and my crotch.
Ferraris are already so like out of the realm of possibility for most people that you don't get that from watching a Ferrari race where you do from watching like a BMW or a Mustang or even a Porsche. You can see like the skeleton of my own car in there with all that buff stuff on top of it.
That's but what
like
it could
the buff
be.
Stuff, dude. Yeah.
But then a Ferrari, you're like, well, that still looks like a spaceship.
I wonder how they landed on 25 cars, though. It seems pretty arbitrary.
Yeah. Well, for homologation. I mean, that's...
I know, but they're like, well, I guess just make like 25.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. Speaking of BMW, I've never really been a big BMW person. Mm-hmm. I respect the brand, obviously, and their efforts, but
I fought it, but I'm,
on Monday, we
you
shot a video.
Being a Beamer guy?
Yeah.
Why?
Just, you know, association.
The culture?
I think that's kind of died off a little bit, though, in like the last 10 years.
BMW makes great cars.
They make awesome cars, but like the perception of the BMW driver is now just like the Tesla driver here in LA. We drove a 330i, like base level versus, not versus, but like compared it to the M3CS.
Oh, yeah. God.
Dude, it was, I mean, M3CS, obviously, an amazing car. Mm-hmm. Super fun, super scary on the track. But the 330i, too, like, you feel the foundation that they built that crazy car on top of.
That's
like, it's obviously not as good. The tires on it sucked. It had a lot of body roll, but it was still very, very good. I'm like, oh.
Yeah.
It's still got the same belly.
I kind of like the BMW.
It's the ultimate driving machine.
It really is.
I have a BMW, and it's my favorite car I've ever owned. Like, I don't know. Like, it just feels exactly how I've always thought a car should feel.
Yeah. When I bought that 330ci, I was like, this is a piece of shit, and it's still so fun.
Yeah.
And oh, yeah, you had one of those, huh?
Yeah, and you drove it, too, and you're like, oh,
it's great.
My uncle used to have these, now I get it.
Yeah,
yeah.
It was a lot of fun.
It's just like the steering wheel is right where it should be, and the shifter's right where it should be.
Yeah.
And the
and it feels just narrow. Yours probably even more so, but it just feels like you're in this little, like, cart, and it's just the, got as much power as you want.
You know my favorite part
it's
of BMWs is, though?
What?
The extendable... thigh thing on the seats.
Yeah.
Why doesn't every car have that?
Dude, mine is
I need that.
Almost 40 years old and it has that.
That's crazy. That's crazy. That's crazy. And mine's bright red. All right. So back in group five, there was an effort to make the regulations a little bit more organized. The FIA reviewed its classification. Okay. So from 72 until 76, the rules excluded the minimum production requirement. So they didn't have to build those 25 cars.
Yeah.
And they limited the engine capacity to just 3,000 cubic centimeters or
three liters. Faygo.
But everything changed again in 1976.
When America was founded.
Rather than attempt to save the increasingly unpopular prototypes, the FIA reworked Group 5 regulations once again. The idea was this: a category for nearly unrestricted race cars built off production models people already know and love.
Perfect idea.
They called it Group 5 Special Production. And this notable era extended from 76 until 1982. That's what we're focusing on today.
It is pretty crazy that we've only been a country for like over 200 years. But
it'll
still
be 250 in 2 years.
250 years is like nothing for a country.
I mean, it's also quite a lot for a lot of countries.
Yeah. A lot of countries were formed like in the 60s, I guess.
Well, it's like in Mighty Ducks 2 when they're having history class. Yeah. The teacher says, like, yeah, we're just a teenager like you guys. Like the teen, like the Mighty Ducks, they're all teens.
Yeah.
And then she's like, well, the United States is a teenager too.
Oh, okay. And then Goldberg's like, wah!
Goldberg's like, I diarrhea'd.
Yeah. Oopsie, I diarrhea'd.
Oopsie.
I haven't seen that movie since I was like 4 years old, I think.
Really? Mighty Ducks 2?
Yeah.
Wow.
Is that the one where they go to Minnesota?
Mighty Ducks 2, they're in the Olympics. Junior Olympics.
Oh.
Then the third,
made some changes to the rules, and kids are in.
Then Mighty Ducks 3, they go to this like elite high school.
That I think is in Minnesota.
Yeah, and they're the JV team, and like the varsity is like, you guys aren't so hot. And then they like play a game. Spoiler alert. Then they play a game.
For D3.
For D3 Mighty Ducks. They play a game against the varsity team. And like the Mighty Ducks win. And like the whole varsity team is like not on the team anymore. And the Mighty Ducks are just the varsity team now. And like, as like, you can't a normal person can't like feel proud of the Mighty Ducks because you're like, oh, you just ruined all those kids' lives. Like,
yeah, that was like they're going to be their you know, meal ticket.
They should have been better players.
Well, they should have been but that's also not how sports work. Like some of them would try out and make it.
Yeah.
Some of them would try out and not make it.
They would really happen is that they beat varsity and then varsity for the next practice has to do like suicides all the whole practice.
But then they would still be varsity.
Yeah. Yeah. They would still be varsity and like Charlie would probably start on varsity.
Do you think they still call it suicides? That drill where you run back and forth between the
lines? No, it's ladders.
Ladders.
Oh, that is so weak.
But they the full name is ladders that you hang yourself from.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. Ladders you use to climb up to the rafters and tie a rope and hang yourself.
Okay, so from 1976 until 1982.
Honestly?
It's much more graphic.
So from 76 to 82, the rules are simple. And less than 2.5 pages. That's a rule book I want to read. The regulations demanded that the cars had to retain a silhouette resembling the original production car, an engine type homologated to that car, engine type.
So like a V8?
I think so.
Is that up for interpretation?
I think that's pretty loose.
Yeah,
and
loose.
A handful of panels such as doors and a hood.
Yes.
Retaining production dimensions.
Yes. Dimensions.
Yeah. So not the crazy Bozuzoku ones.
No.
A handful of panels.
Yeah.
But like,
the
actual.
The ones that never change.
It doesn't have to be the actual panel. It's just the same dimensions.
Dimensions.
So like the doors have to be the same size.
So they can be made out of paper.
They can be made out of other
paper.
Yeah. I love this. Those were the rules. That was it. Almost everything else could be made bespoke to achieve maximum performance. Occasionally referred to as silhouette cars.
There you go.
Engineers were given full license to run wild, creating cars that barely resembled their production counterparts, often putting speed over safety. Group 5 cars battled it out all over the world in series like the World Championship for Makes.
Love that.
Great name. The Deutsche Rennsport Meisterkraft, or DRM. Mm-hmm. You had IMSA GTX here in the States, and you had All Japan Sports Prototype Championship over there in Japan.
So those are like the more famous ones, more famous silhouette cars that we know.
Mm-hmm.
Some really sick ones. But I really like the German ones, too.
Yeah.
Deutsche Rennsport Meisterkraft. We'll get right back to it, but first, a few commercials.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks. Like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
From the beginning of the 1976 Group 5 regulations, Porsche dominated. Thanks to a win at the World Championship for Makes by legendary driver Jochen Mass and Jackie Ickx, as well as the car that would come to define Group 5, the Porsche 935.
Now, Jochen Mass has that helmet that we all love, the skull
is
one.
Is that him?
That's him.
Okay.
Not Jochen Rindt. It's Jochen
We made a mistake in the past. We called him Jochen Rindt.
Yeah.
It's Jochen Mass
has the skull helmet.
Yeah.
The sickest helmet ever.
It is.
Based on the 911 Turbo, the 935 was visually distinguished by its aerodynamic flat nose and striking double rear wing.
Flat nose. Yeah.
That's cool.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
The double wing is really
sick.
You
could eat a Christmas dinner off of that.
You could eat a freaking Christmas goose off that schnoz.
Oh, it's so greasy.
What?
The goose is a lot of fat.
Yeah. Greasy, greasy bird.
Yeah,
it's a greasy bird.
They use goose fat in
French fries.
Don't eat goose when you're on Ozempic, I guess, right?
Yeah, you'll die. That's a project you should undertake.
Usually I'm all about, you know, giving it the goose.
Yeah.
But not if you're on Ozempic.
But not if you're on Ozempic.
If you ever do an ad read for Ozempic.
And remember, don't give it the goose.
Normally, we're all about giving it the goose here at Gas. Yeah.
But on Ozempic, try and stay away from such a greasy bird. After some tweaks in the edition.
I am thinking about going on Ozempic, so that's why we're
talking
about.
Are you?
Oh, really?
You should.
What? That sucks. I feel like I've trimmed down a little bit since Christmas.
Yeah, for sure.
I drank a lot over Christmas break.
Did you really?
Yeah, it's like nonstop. Dude.
It's bad news, man. Yeah. After some tweaks and the addition of a second turbocharger.
That was a good gurgle, too.
Okay. So
your liver is failing. Yeah.
Well, I'm on a free trial of Ozempic.
You ate so much pork belly this morning, bro. I watched you.
I come in, I make a giant cup of coffee, and just eat pork belly.
Yeah.
I don't even know why we stock it in our fridge, but we do.
Yeah, we do. After some tweaks and the addition of a second turbocharger in 1977, the 935/77 boasted a 2,857cc flat six bi-turbo engine capable of up to 630 horsepower.
Man. This thing's sweet. So this is kind of like the car that if you've seen BC Moto and his...
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that's the one he based it off of?
Yeah. I mean, this is pretty close to that.
He's got the whale tail.
Whale tail on the back. Very flat. Cut off of the tail at the back there too, and it has like a more pronounced Daytona effect. Yeah, yeah, it has more of like a pronounced like fastback as well. This thing's sweet, dude.
It's almost like the silhouette is calling to me.
Okay, guys, 630 horsepower, and it only weighed a little over 2,000 pounds.
God, that would be kind
what
of a hard
Nolan bench presses.
Yeah,
used to be
8 times.
That'd be a pretty hard car to control. Methinks.
I bet that would be not one for amateurs.
Yeah.
As a result of these changes, a Porsche 935 won 8 of the first 9 races that season.
Wow.
You imagine, like, that one day that they didn't win, they were probably so bummed.
Yeah.
Like, oh, 9. Scheiße. To illustrate just how successful the 935 was in Group 5, in the rare instances the factory Porsche team didn't win, one of the competing private 935s often would.
That's how you know it's good.
Yeah.
That's how you know it's good.
That's how you know it's good, when the rich guys win too. Despite its dominance, Porsche wasn't content to rest on the laurels of the 935/77. In 1978, they introduced the most powerful 911 maced model ever made, the 935-78.
Oh,
known by many
better
as Moby Dick.
The whale?
Yeah. For its wide, long tail body. Mm. The 935-78 was the culmination of the 935's development efforts. It differed from previous models in its modified frame, aerodynamically optimized body, and the fact that it was right-hand drive.
Whoa. Why?
JDM much? Though there were initially problems with the cylinder heads, they were simply welded together.
Whoa.
Hmm. For cooling, water was used to cool the cylinder
this
heads.
This is what BC Moto really based their 935
yeah,
off of.
Yeah, yeah. This is
not
Moby
the
Dick.
Previous
the famous,
one that I mentioned.
This is the famous boy, Moby
and
Dick.
And he made fully electric, right?
Yeah, he's electric.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Rod Chong has one, too.
Yeah. I think you can buy... Oh, yeah, that one's sweet. I think you can have him build it with, like, a turbo engine, not... EV, like you can have it either way if you want.
Busy Moto?
I think so.
You can buy that car from him?
He makes...
You can if you commission one, yeah.
What?
Yeah.
You have to get it. What do you...
There's multiple.
A
there's a few of these cars out there, like Rod Chong's, and then there's another one. There's another EV one that has like a really long swept tail. I think I saw that at the Purist event.
Is it pink?
No, it's black.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
BC's is pink.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah. But did those really start as 935s or were they 911s that they just extended?
I would guess.
I think Rod's is a 935.
Really?
Wow.
Yeah.
That's wild.
But why would you take like, I mean, for the electric one, it could just be a 911.
That has to be a clone of some. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
I guess we could ask him.
Yeah.
We have his phone number. No, we should speculate.
Yeah.
For cooling, water was used to cool the cylinder heads and air was used to cool the cylinder. So the little hybrid cooling system.
Wow, weird.
With the newly introduced four-valve technology, the Boxer engine had 2 turbochargers with charge air cooling at its disposal. And with the enlarged 3,211cc engine, the 935-78 could put out gentlemen, 845 Hertzpers.
That is fast.
Yeah. Moby Dick was retired after only a few races. But at the 24 hours of Le Mans, the car hit an incredible 227 miles per hour in the straights.
That's scooting.
Yeah. And drivers Manfred Schurti and Rolf Stommelen. What?
Manfred Schurti.
And Rolf Stommelen finished eighth overall. Moby Dick might be the most iconic Group 5 935, but shockingly, it was not the fastest. That title isn't even held by the factory Porsche team. Instead, it belongs to the Kramer-built 935 K3. Brothers Erwin and Manfred Kramer were long-established Porsche dealers and modifiers who opted to develop their own 935 for Group 5. The German brothers honed their concept with the K3 in 1978, introducing revised aerodynamics and switching out the stock air-to-water intercooler with an air-to-air intercooler, which lightened the overall weight and eliminated the risk of cooling system leaks. The result was the most successful 935 ever put on the track.
The 935/77.961-234.
K3, I would not name anything K3.
Why?
KKK.
Oh.
Yep.
I thought you were like, oh, I don't want to be associated with K2 because that's the most scary mountain to climb.
Yeah, K cubed. That's also KKK.
Yeah. That's more KKK.
Yeah. Okay, yep. Let's move on.
80 cubic feet a woman. Kramer's Porsche 935 K3 was ready to race in the 1979 Zolder round of the German Sports Car Championship. Driver Klaus Ludwig, the most German name ever. If you were making a joke about a German guy, you might call him Klaus Ludwig.
Klaus Krampus Ludwig.
He drove the car to an impressive debut victory, beating a field packed with Porsche-built 935s. He continued his good form throughout the season and won 10 races out of a possible 11. At the Nürburgring, he set a lap time of 7.33, which, to put into context, would have been fast enough to qualify for the last F1 race held at the Nürburgring.
Yeah, I think the Taycan just got 7.07.
No shit.
Yeah. Taycan's fast.
It beat the
so fast.
Plaid.
Yeah,
well, by like 23 seconds.
Wow. Well, it's because they've been making cars for more than 6 years.
Yes.
And they like them.
Yeah.
Nerb time.
Wow, shots fired, dude.
Wow, shots fired.
707, that is...
That's so fast.
Fast as shit.
Because they understand suspension.
That's real fast.
With co-drivers and brothers Don and Bill Whittington, Ludwig led the Kramer Le Mans effort and piloted the K3 to the first Le Mans win for a production-based car since the Second World War. Overall win, guys. At Le Mans.
Yeah.
In a production-based car.
Wow.
Production-based. That is very, very impressive.
That's insane. To put that into context, that's if you took our Civic and won Le Mans.
It's exactly like that.
That'd be sick if we won Le Mans in this Civic, dude. Think about it, man. It'd be sick.
That'd be so sick.
Write it down, man. Let's do it.
Okay.
Let's do it.
I'm actually gonna do it.
Le Mans in June.
Dude. Le Mans
deadline June
in Civic.
Yeah. Win.
Underline.
Win.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's
okay,
it's
good.
There, it's win.
Okay, win, yeah. Because that's the important part.
Yeah. Nobody gives a shit if you...
No, man. We got to win it in the Senate. That'd be sick.
Yeah, it would.
Overall win?
That'd be so sick.
It's so sick. You know how many people would be like, yo! You guys...
No way!
No way! You guys! A YouTube channel won Le Mans in a 1993 Civic.
That'd be sick. Cool.
And then we'd have our moment, and then we would go back to our lives.
We go back to our lives, logging in the content mines. This was a feat that couldn't be repeated until the McLaren F1 in 1995.
Wow.
It had become impossible to ignore the overwhelming success of the 935. So, unless you were driving a Porsche, chances are their domination was getting annoying.
Ugh, I'm so annoyed.
I'm so annoyed by this freaking car.
That's exactly what Ford was saying.
Yes.
After dominating the Deutsche Rennsport Meisterkraft for 5 years, this is the precursor to the German touring car series, they were perhaps starting to get a little cocky about their winning streak, and that was thanks to Ford's partnership with Zaxspeed. Founded by Prussian-born Eric Zakowski after the Second World War, Zaxspeed Racing started as a small garage, modifying Ford Escort 1300 GTs for races at the Nürburgring. We talked about those cars last time we talked, you guys.
Yeah, very cool cars.
After they caught Ford's eye with their 1300, Zaxspeed was officially brought on to prepare works, escorts, and Capris. And soon, Zaxspeed became Ford's official DRM team during its Group 2 touring car years, establishing a working relationship between the two that would continue well into the next decade.
I didn't know that Ford was in DTM.
Oh, dude, you're about to find out. From 1972 until 1976, Zaxspeed was behind every single DRM championship-winning car.
Wow.
Perhaps the most special of these was the iconic Ford Escort RS 1600 Mark I, which featured a modified Ford BDA dual overhead cam engine bored out to 2 liters, producing 250 brake horsepower. Driven by the very German-sounding Hans Heyer, this Escort claimed a DRM championship title in both 75 and 76. Then, in 1977, the series opened up to allow Group 5 cars to complete.
Almost perfect.
Compete is what I meant to say.
Yeah.
They allowed Group 5 cars to compete. Not only did Group 5 prosper, but it drew more cars than the World Championship for makes, which was the series Group 5 rules were created for. The only problem, you ask?
Yeah.
It became yet another arena where Porsches dominated.
There's so many acronyms in here.
There is a lot, but it's fine. Acronyms.
It made me think of a cool rapper name. Just the letters BDI. Like BDI?
Oh, yeah.
BDI?
Yeah. BDI. Yeah.
You're always squinting?
Yeah.
Looking back and forth?
BDI.
The DRM.
That sounds like a reggae guy's name.
BDI.
BDI. BDI. Fucking.
You're just like a white guy doing like, I'm doing hip-hop infused reggae
I'm
music.
From Ontario.
I'm from
Zigazag.
Placentia.
Placentia.
I'm from Placentia. Shouts to the Cottonmouth Kings.
Yeah.
Dude, yeah, that sounds like a guy that would show up on one of their tracks.
BDI?
BDI.
Recriminalize it.
Recriminalize it. Featuring BDI and,
like, and Shaggy Shaken
the Killer or something like that. And you're like, who's this guy?
Yeah.
And Rome.
And Rome, dude. Did you see that Rome got kicked out?
Yeah.
Or they're getting, they're replacing him with Brad's son.
Yeah.
Is this Cottonmouth Kings?
No. Sublime.
Sublime with Rome. He's getting... This is these last scheduled shows will be his last shows with Sublime.
Oh, man, let's go.
It's been a great 15 years, and he thinks...
He's been with them a long time.
Yeah, way longer than Brad Noll.
That's a great point. Wow.
But he didn't write any songs.
No. No, they did.
Oh, really?
There's some Sublime with Rome songs, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I think they... I mean, they're new stuff, I would assume.
They have new stuff?
Dude. Right after the show, we're going to hang out.
Okay. Yeah. Maybe.
We're going to explore this discography.
Maybe.
We're going to take some flavored vapes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah.
I mean, we probably...
get tilted.
Let's get tilted.
To Sublime, dude.
Sublime.
With Rome.
And now, time to pay the bills.
So the DRM series saw Porsche 935s battle it out against BMW 320i's and Lancia's Beto Monte Carlo attempt to take on the Kramer K3s to no avail.
The car's such a beta.
Dude, look at the Beamer.
Oh, it's interesting looking.
The Beamers are sick.
Yeah.
These are sick.
The Lancia doesn't have a lot of extra hoo-ha on it.
No,
it doesn't.
Not a lot of extra hoo-ha, but that Beamer, you could eat a Christmas goose off the front of that
apron. Yeah, you could. You sure could.
You wouldn't want to if you're on Ozempic. But.
That's a front apron that Martha Stewart would have.
So, Ford desperately wanted to take down the 935, but after the oil crisis and the closing of its main in-house racing facility, they knew they needed Zaxspeed. Under the watchful eye of Zaxspeed Zakowski and Ford Europe chief engineer Thomas Ammerschalger, the team schemed to create the ultimate Group 5 silhouette racer. Based on the Ford Mark III Capri, it was known as as a Zaxby's Capri Turbo.
Zaxby's sounds like a barbecue restaurant.
Ooh,
oh, we're going to Zaxby's. Oh, pick me up some sauce.
Yeah.
Give me a bottle of Zaxby's sauce.
They sell it by the,
spicy
by the bottle.
Maybe.
You can get
it
a bottle
$23.
There. Will you get me a bottle of Zaxby's mustard sauce? It's the yellow one.
Yeah, this thing is rad, super wide body, super, I mean, it's a race car.
Yeah.
It's almost like if you put the fenders next to each other, it's like half the width of the car.
Yeah, this thing F's hard.
It's 650 horsepower.
But also tenderly.
To answer your question, the Beamer.
Are you kidding me?
The 320i makes 650 horsepower from a four-cylinder?
That's nutty.
What the heck?
Straight up bonkers bananas.
Well, the Capri is a 1.4 liter.
That's a banana split.
Jeez Louise.
Wow. As with most other Group 5 monsters, the A and C pillars were the only things taken from the production car, aside from ancillary bits like rear taillights. The Capri would use a BDA-derived 1.4-liter twin-cam, 16-valve, 4-pot, at first, boosted with twin turbos slung from the side on a convoluted turbo manifold manufactured from a chrome-nickel alloy in an attempt to manage heat issues. Because, yeah, you're going to be making a lot of heat with two turbos next to each other.
You got two turbos, you're going to make a lot of heat.
You're going to make a lot of heat with two turbos. Two turbos, you're going to be making a lot of heat. You better
have a pretty convoluted turbo manifold.
Yeah, you might want to make it out of chrome nickel alloy.
With twin intercoolers and four throttle bodies, it was good for 370 horsepower and weighed less than 1,300 pounds.
I bet that's really fun.
That's fun.
That's so light. To achieve that insanely light weight, the Capri featured an alloy space frame with the roll cage as an integral part of the structure. The suspension pickup points mirrored those of the production Capri, and Zaxby's used past experience working with the Capri RS3100 to make these work reliably. And aesthetically, the Zaxby's took the silhouette concept to an extreme. This car sat low, at only 43.7 inches. The entire car barely came up to the sill of the original. Then they added a big wing and big fenders. The monstrous boxed arches covered the 19 by 12.5 inch rear and 16 by 10 inch front BBS wheels, as well as housed the radiators in ducts
to
keep the 1.4 liter engine
had
cool, calm, and collected.
19s in the back and 16s in the front.
That is wild.
It's like a Big Daddy Roth car.
That's nutty.
It's
nuttier than a freaking organic protein bar.
Yeah.
The one with like two ingredients. Yeah.
That's nuttier than
a kind bar.
Kind bar.
It's nuttier than a kind bar,
it's
Joe.
Guttier than
kind bar.
Nuttier.
Your bars hurt my teeth.
It's nuttier than Gwyneth Paltrow's poop. Yeah.
She eats a lot of seeded bread.
Seeded bread. No bread. No gluten.
Oh, yeah.
Not Gwyneth.
Well, it's made out of rice.
It's made out of rice. She probably didn't eat rice either.
The Zaxby's Capri made its first official run at the DRM title in 1979 with three Capris on the Division II grid. Harold Ertel and Hans Heyer were the team's permanent drivers, with the third car driven by a revolving roster of drivers. Yeah. The Capri took the season by storm and walked away with the Division II title. But while the DRM had two divisions, it only had one winner. And that honor belonged to the Division I ace, Klaus Ludwig, and his Kramer 935 K3.
Kramer
935. 1980 saw Zaxby's double down on the Capri. Taking the fight to the 935 in Division I, they swapped the 1.4-liter engine for a larger 1.7 twin turbocharged engine capable of up to 600 horsepower and added a monster front splitter and towering rear wing. But they went beyond just retooling the car. They stole Klaus Ludwig from Porsche.
Oh, just like Krampus steals children every Christmas.
Yeah.
Bad
and
children.
And gives them to Epstein.
No.
What?
No.
Okay.
Too dark.
Topical.
That's the world we live in, Joe.
It is. It's a dark
world.
Yeah,
we live in a world where Krampus is
bad. Yeah, check Krampus out the new Cottonmouth Kings track, Krampus, featuring BDI, World.
Yeah, there is a song they did with Violent J, or Shaggy 2 Dope.
Which one?
Which one? That matters.
I forget. Yeah, they're completely different.
I don't know.
It matters to us.
Well, they have very different. I don't know, dude. I'd listen to the This Is Cottonmouth Kings Spotify playlist on my way home a couple of days ago just to get in the desert truck kind of mindset. It's literally all about smoking weed.
Really?
There is no metaphors for anything else. It is just literally smoking just smoking
weed. That's cool.
They're having a good time.
Delegalize it.
Recriminalize marijuana.
Weed.
Oh, it's the F*** the Police song. That's right. Oh, but it's not a cover of F*** the Police.
No?
It's their own song.
Oh, yeah.
Called F*** the Police. It's very funny. That one's not about smoking weed.
No?
I don't think so.
Do they smoke weed at all in it?
I think they do.
Oh, okay.
And that's what leads to their trouble with the police.
Got it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, now you wouldn't have trouble with it because it's not illegal.
Right.
So they would have never written that masterpiece.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we need to recriminalize it so we can get songs like that.
We can get
like
the music
that.
Back. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so Ludwig told Kramer that if they couldn't pay him more than 70,000 Deutschmarks or 16,000 US dollars, then he was gone.
Yo, 61,000. Oh, that's today.
Oh, yeah, so that's 61 grand today. And they couldn't pay him that, so he left. Then Kramer sued him for his entire net worth, which put him, in Klaus's own words, quote,
back to zero.
And so, for the 1980 season, a penniless and pissed off Le Mans winner and former DRM champion Klaus Ludwig would be piloting the souped-up Capri, capable of reaching 600 horsepower and more than 180 miles an hour.
Dude, they sued him? What a bunch of chumps.
Yeah, that's pretty chump shit.
Yeah, that's
perhaps
straight up.
Unsurprisingly, though, competitors complained. The car was protested for the new front splitter and over wide wing. So Zaxby decided to go even further and introduced full length ground effect Venturi tunnels with flexible side skirts.
Yeah, bitch.
These modifications created a suction effect and kept Ludwig in front until the skirts would inevitably wear out.
Nice.
Despite the team's dominance, the aforementioned complaints led to controversy over the revisions to the wing, and the team was stripped of some valuable points. And as a result, the 1980 title still belonged to Porsche.
What a bunch of wieners, though.
Wieners. Yeah.
Like, pay complaining and suing.
Yeah.
Wieners. Yeah. After the 1980 DRM season, Ford came to Zaxby with an interesting proposal. Having dipped their toes back into European racing, Ford was itching for a triumphant return to the U.S. scene. America was quick to adopt the burgeoning Group 5 regulations laid out by the FIA in 1976 and had been running them under the banner of IMSA's GTX category.
Oh, okay.
And much like Europe, the Porsche 935 was dominating. Although the racing was close, IMSA president John Bishop worried that no one would continue to pay to see a Porsche win every race. As cars became increasingly uncompetitive against the onslaught of 935s, Ford's special vehicles operations looked to the success of the Zaxby Capri and came up with a plan to end its decade-long hiatus from American racing.
You don't want SVO on your ass.
You do not want FSVO on your ass.
Yeah, you have to get a cream for it.
You got
to
get a cream for
FSVO. That's,
yeah.
It's really itchy.
Sorry, guys. I can't play golf today. I got SSVO.
It's chafy.
I had to go to the doctor. They gave me a salve.
They looked at my ass. My
doctor looked at my ass.
They had to get out the ass scope. And
they had to get my ass scope.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
One time I had this like boil on my butt cheek.
Yeah.
And I went to the doctor and they like lanced it and it was like so awful.
Was it, did it stink?
Yeah. She actually said, she was like, oh my God, it stinks.
That's unprofessional.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then they like shoved gauze in it and I had to go back like 3 days later. To
oh, was this a pilodidinal cyst?
Probably.
I had one of these as well.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And I had to get the gauze taken out.
You got to like wash.
The doctor, you know, or the nurse or the medical assistant who took it out was so hot.
Dude, same.
Yeah. She was so hot. And she was like pulling the gauze out of my ass sore.
Yeah.
I was so embarrassed.
What?
Do you have the same experience?
Same experience.
Wonder if it was the same person.
Probably not.
That's their only job is like pulling.
Well, no,
gauze
this was like a
ass.
Trainee. It was like one of her first days, I think, at the hospital. She was you know, like shadowing another doctor.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I was like, this is the most embarrassing day of my life. Right
yeah.
Here.
Speaking of shadows, like let's get back to the silhouette series. Nice.
Let's see if Ford can lance out.
It was the size of a golf ball.
No.
Yeah, on my butt.
I bet it stunk so bad.
Yeah.
I remember
the consistency
smell.
Similar to
our
cream
just got
cheese.
Picked up.
Hey, our order from Brooklyn Bagels is here.
Cream cheese.
Oh, that's so gross.
All right. The plan would come in the form of the Zach Speed Mustang. Now, if you're a massive Mustang fan and you're wondering why we're two-thirds through our story and just now getting to the Mustang part of the episode titled The Mustang That Took Down Porsche.
Oh, I know this car.
Listen, we've got some bad news for you. Some say that the Ford Porsche Killer Mustang Turbo was, in fact, just a rebodied Zach Speed Capri. Zach Speed had been commissioned by Ford to develop a continuation of the Capri with a Mustang shell. The recent success of the Capri in the DRM was an excellent jumping-off point for the official return of Ford to U.S. motor racing. After their pause in the 1970s, thanks to the oil crisis. And what better way to return to form than beating the 935s?
I don't care that's a Capri.
Yeah, I don't care that's a Capri.
It's still Ford.
Mustang,
yeah, I don't
Capri,
care if it's
same
Capri.
Thing. Yeah. Yeah.
It looks nothing like a Mustang. Listen, looks nothing like a Mustang.
I'm all about the U.S. smashing Germans.
It's definitely just the Capri with the Mustang sticker on the front.
This is like the worst gen of Capri or of Mustangs too.
With Fox
right?
body?
Early Fox body, not the worst, but
this the like really close together front headlight version.
Dude, I would daily.
I would daily a group 5 race car.
I bet it just sounds
teeth just get rattled out.
Like everything just
yeah. Everything.
Like power steering.
Your brakes sound like that. Power steering. Engine.
Fuel pump.
Fuel pump.
Just a lot of
yeah.
Little tiny electric motors are yelling at you. But that's the kind of stuff that gets my blood pumping. That's the kind of stuff that gets my goat going. That's the kind of stuff that really makes my heart bleed. With the help of Bill Schott Racing, the Ford team took the 1.7-liter four-cylinder turbocharged engine of the Zach Speed Capri and wrapped it in a shell evocative of a Mustang streetcar. Then the team...
Bullshit! It looks nothing like it.
You know, it's evocative.
Sure.
It's evocative of one.
Sure. All right. All right.
Then the team redesigned that Mustang bodywork to maximize downforce, adding a huge rear wing, extended front splitter, and wide fender arches. This car,
I guess the C-pillar,
gentlemen, was a fast, capable of over 600 horsepower. And in one more nod to the Mustang's Capri roots, Ford decided it would tap none other than Klaus Ludwig to drive for its inaugural season.
They better pay him this time.
They better pay him. The stage is set, okay? The 1981 IMSA Camel GT would be the battleground for Ford's final push against Porsche's reign. And while the inside of the car couldn't be more German, the Miller-sponsored livery
and
Mustang
brother.
Shell... said American. A beer sponsored car and a cigarette company sponsored race. I dare you to find something more eagle than that.
It says Miller time
on the front
on
splitter.
The splitter. That's pretty
tight.
Cool.
Yeah. Mustang Ford Team Miller. I feel like they should reverse those, right?
Whatever, man. It's Miller time. I don't
care.
Oh,
it also says it's Miller time on the back wing.
Yeah, that's cool. The field in the 1981 IMSA Camel GT was fierce. There were over 10 Porsche 935s set to compete, with several K3s driven by the likes of John Fitzpatrick and Bobby Rahal. I know that guy's name. Along with Corvettes, Datsun Zs, nice. BMW M1s.
ZXs, like my car.
Just like your car, Joe, the M1s were sponsored by Red Lobster Racing.
Nice.
And by the fifth round, the new Lola T600. Not to mention, there is a 280 ZX driven by Academy Award winner and official coolest guy in the world, Paul Newman.
Paul Rudd.
Paul Rudd. Paul Newman. Needless to say, Klaus would have his work cut out for him. The Mustang stormed the circuit in its debut performance at the third round of the IMSA GTO at Road Atlanta, the 100 miles. Klaus came within 0.144 seconds of a win,
wow,
finishing on the heels of John Fitzpatrick's 935. It was clear that Ford was back in a big way.
Big way.
In the words of Mickey Mattis, Ford's racing marketing manager at the time, quote,
sorry, I'm looking at the Red Lobster beef. I was at Road Atlanta for the debut of the Miller Mustang on April 12, 1981. We hosted a major event on the hill at Turn 5 for dealers across from a trackside billboard claiming, "The boss is back." It marked the return of Ford to active competition.
That's so cocky.
The boss
That's
is
just
back.
This guy telling about a thing he did.
I know, the boss is back billboard.
The boss is back. That's sick.
Well, he's a marketing guy.
Yeah, he's a marketing guy.
So, like, he loves, that's what he lives for, is that kind of stuff.
Yeah, this guy, I live for the billboards.
Rules.
They love their billboards. But Klaus and his Mustang were just getting started. Ford didn't just want a solid performance. They wanted a win, damn it. And finally, on June 14th, that's exactly what they got. Screaming down the Brainerd International Raceway after taking the lead from John Paul Jr.'s Lola T600, Ludwig battled Fitzpatrick's 935 once again. But after Fitzpatrick suffered problems with his battery, it was no competition. On lap 29 of 42, Ludwig and his Mustang took first, averaging 110 miles per hour with a margin of victory of 53 seconds. Second, third, and fourth places all went to 935s. Even more spectacularly, this was the first American car to win a Camel GT since 1977. On the win, Klaus later said, quote,
running alone in the lead is much harder than running in tight competition. You want to run fast enough to keep your concentration, but you also have to be steady as to not break the car.
Because battery problems led to a Mustang victory over the 935, fans may have assumed the win was a fluke, but Sears Point, or Sonoma Raceway, two races later, would prove them wrong. It started with a bang. Klaus immediately jumped out to a big lead, but it wouldn't be Fitzpatrick and his Porsche that he'd be battling. Instead, Brian Redman and a Lola T600 quickly caught up, eventually passing. Unswayed, Klaus put on a charge, doggedly pursuing the Lola.
It's hard to tilt Klaus.
Can't tilt man.
Can't put him on tilt.
Nope. As they entered their last lap, they spotted something ahead. It was Paul Newman in his monster of a Datsun V8 turbo, desperately trying to escape a last-place finish. Redman had to slam on the brakes to avoid hitting the Datsun in the corners, and Klaus, hot on his heels, made contact. Both cars spun. But Klaus was able to get himself going again.
Nice.
He was able to hold off Redman for the win.
Whoa.
Wow. As the Mustang passed the finish line, we all have to believe Fitzpatrick in his 935 read the "It's Miller Time" livery and recognized that just as American titans, Miller and Anheuser-Busch, toppled Germanic brewing hegemony, so too could Ford topple Porsche.
I mean, Miller and Anheuser-Busch, those are both German names too, and they use Germanic brewing technique. Never mind.
They're over here in America, ruining everything.
Using German recipes.
It's different, man.
They came over here and then bought everything and made everything worse. Because that's the American way.
I really want to go back to Milwaukee and just drink a giant beer and eat a hot dog in the park.
Make everything a little bit worse.
Though it may not seem like much, Sears Point marks the end of the 935's reign. It's no coincidence Klaus fought tooth and nail with the T600 and not a 935 to secure the Zach Speed Mustang's legacy. In the years to follow, it wouldn't be the Mustang that defined American racing. The past had belonged to the 935, but the future belonged to the T600. Just like the future also belongs to the T800 and the TX, if we're not careful.
T1000. T-1000 was T-1000. Arnold?
No, T-800 was Arnold.
T-800's Arnold. T-1000 is...
With like a high cheekbone guy?
Yeah, well, shit, what's his name?
Not Ray Liotta.
Nah, that should narrow it down a little bit.
But he looks like Ray Liotta.
Robert Patrick. One of the greats, honestly. I love
How him. Did I forget that name?
Yeah.
I watched Avatar last night.
Again?
Again?
No, I watched the first one. Oh. Dude, and again, James Cameron is so good at the, like, all right, you son of a son, like, getting ready to go out.
Yeah.
With Stephen Lang.
He's a great
dude. That guy is so the perfect good. Army
I love
guy.
Him.
Yeah.
First one, I think, is a little boring on a repeat viewing.
Yeah.
In the theaters?
Well, I haven't
3D,
seen it forever.
It was so good in theaters,
and I
dude.
Just watched Way of the Water.
Way of
the
Water's good, too. So now, I'm afraid to watch that again, though.
Now it's like I'm watching a prequel.
Yeah. Well, are you excited that there's three more Avatars coming out?
Yes.
I'll go see every Avatar movie. I will see any movie that James Cameron puts out.
James Cameron rolls.
He's the best. The Abyss?
The Abyss, so
great
good.
Movie.
Slept on a little bit.
Yeah. That rat? Breathing in the water is a real thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's oxygenated.
And that's why the, a little physical media drama for you. That's why the new Abyss 4K isn't coming out in Europe is because
animal
rights.
Yeah.
And
really?
it's seen as animal abuse, drowning a rat in oxygenated fluid, even though it lived.
Whoa.
Yeah. I mean, it is weird.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Super weird.
Yeah. I could go either way on that, but
sure.
Yeah.
I don't care, honestly. I don't give a shit.
For a brief shining moment in 1981, Klaus Ludwig...
I killed a rat this month.
This month?
Yeah.
How?
The trap.
Okay.
Oh,
smashed
yeah.
his little neck.
Mm.
He was cute.
Oh.
Yeah.
In his dead form?
Yeah. A little sad.
Yeah. What kind of ruckus was he causing in your house?
So we left the door open when we went out one time, and then which we don't do so don't come into my house and hide in my closet and murder me when I go to sleep, but he snuck in.
Mm-hmm.
And then he was like under our sink area.
Mm-hmm.
And like we would just hear him, and then at night he would come out and poop.
Oh.
And so I
would the dog also freak out hearing the noises and stuff?
No.
No?
She didn't do anything. Mm. She only cares about the mailman. Mm. But I put a little peanut butter in a dog food.
Oh.
Mm.
Loved it
until
he died.
Mm.
But he was cute. He was like an outdoor rat, so he didn't have like a pink tail. He had like a brown kind of furry tail.
Ugly. Future belonged to the T-600. However, for a brief shining moment in 1981... Klaus Ludwig's Porsche Killer Mustang proved it could beat them all. Later that same year, Klaus would return to DRM in a Zach Speed Capri, winning 9 out of 13 races, putting an end to Porsche's claim to the title. Finally, an effective nail in the coffin for the 935 during the last year of Group 5. Klaus spent the next several seasons racing for Ford in America in collaboration with Zach Speed. He piloted a string of Zach Speed Mustang evolutions in the waning years of IMSA's GTX class and into the post-Group 5 era, culminating in Ford's sci-fi single-speeder 1986 Mustang Probe, a carbon fiber chassis sports car with a 2.1-liter engine that, when boosted, could provide up to 750 brake horsepower, or as Klaus described it,
shit was quick.
That I gotta see this thing, dude. Zach Speed Probe.
Yeah.
Sci-fi single seater.
Yeah.
7-Eleven.
It doesn't look like a. It's not like a normal Group 5.
No, it looks like the Lola.
It looks more like a prototype. Yeah, that makes sense. That's
Group 5 special production would come to an end in 1982 with the introduction of Group B.
Ooh.
With the rule change effectively bringing the disappearance of bespoke racing machines like the ones seen in previous years. The FIA's goal was to apply Group B requirements to cars designed for circuit racing, but with the increasing popularity of the World Rally Championship, Group B regulated circuit racing quickly faded into obscurity. Fortunately for us, the flame-spitting monsters of Group 5 continue to live on in the memories of motorsport fans around the world.
I think silhouette cars are some of the sickest.
They're so sick.
Definitely.
And they've inspired some of the coolest things, like, you know, Bozuzoku is a little bit inspired by them. I've definitely RWB.
Oh, for sure.
Tries to capture that same feel of one of these cars.
RWB. I mean, on that same token, like... every kind of like Rocket Bunny, all the kind of wide body kits out there. Definitely.
Where you see, it's like anytime you see a regular car just peeking out.
Oh, yeah.
Dude, the new Nissan like concept car that they showed off last night in Japan at the auto salon, that was inspired.
Like GTR looking one?
Yeah, that was inspired by their silhouette race car, their Skyline silhouette car. And it looks very silhouette-y.
Yeah, it does. We got some listener mail.
Hey guys, I'm Ethan Tampkin, a 12-year-old boy with hopes of being a race car driver, and I love listening to your podcast when I play video games and do chores. That is so sweet,
That's
Ethan.
What I also do when I listen to podcasts, video games and chores.
My favorite episode is The Guy Won Le Mans Drunk, a.k.a. Duncan Hamilton. That is also one of my favorite ones. Episode. It's a really fun. I would like you to do an episode on the history of Volvo in rally. Even though they did not compete in Group B rally, Volvo is cool.
Yeah.
Happily, Ethan T. And that you are right about that. Volvo is cool.
Yeah, let's put it on the list. Volvo rally.
Throw it on the list. And thank you for writing in, Ethan.
Yeah. Do your homework, Ethan.
Yeah, go do your homework.
Yeah.
All right, if you want your letter... read on the podcast, you can email us at passgas@donutmedia.com or you can email Nolan at mrsharrystyles@gmail.com. Let's sign off, Nolan. Get off your
Sorry, I got tagged in something.
Oh, we better check that out. Everybody wait. Nolan got
like you weren't on your phone the half this
not
episode.
Not while I'm supposed to.
I
not half.
All right, thanks
you.
For joining
not
us. See you
not
next week.
Not even a little
Bye.
Bit.
I saw you.
Not, definitely not when I was supposed to be doing something.
Uh-huh.
I was looking at the Red Lobster M1.
Okay.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.